From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Each week, our panel of shrinks takes a look at pop culture through the fascinating lens of psychology. I'm Dave Verhagen, here in Nashville. I'm a psychologist, author, Comic-Con panelist, and now Wizard World Comic-Con panelist.
Oh, yeah.
And goat herder. And our trending topic today is pop culture and fear in fearful times. And our Charlotte panel that will talk all about that includes psychologist, author, AspieCon founder, and Comic-Con panelist, also the author of the popular Max Gamer graphic novel and writer of book chapters on the psychology of Star Wars and The Walking Dead, among other things. Back from the dead, Dr. Yep. Frank Gaskell. Hello, Frank.
Hello. Welcome, welcome.
And so you've been back at work for about a week or so now.
That's right.
How's that felt?
I feel good. I have focusing my energy on the positive and not on the negative. I'm
good for you,
looking,
Frank.
Trying to look on the bright side of life, as Monty Python once said. I am. Oh, and
that's
just
good.
I would just like to let you one other thing I learned while I was away.
Yeah.
I don't really recommend Pigeon Forge a whole lot. That's not a place I would really visit too much. Not to offend Pigeon Forge, but it's kind of a little sketch.
Okay.
I'm sure Pigeon Forge will, yeah, they'll feel fine about what you just said.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend Asia. You know, I don't want to offend all them Asians, but.
Little known fact, in Dollywood, they play Dolly Parton all the time.
Wow.
Man, and that's why people come to this podcast, for information like that.
Yep.
Well, also, Emma Kate Wright is here. She's a postdoc now. She used to be a pre-doc, and now she's a postdoc. She is a PhD in psychology. She's also a contributor to ShrinkTank.com. She's a panelist for HeroesCon, and she's here with us. Hello, Emma Kate.
Howdy.
Any fun stuff going on in your life?
Well, actually, Dave, I feel like you can relate to this because I recently slammed my finger in a door.
No.
And it is just the tip that is swollen. But
Just the tip.
And I'm pretty sure it's not broken, but I feel like you can relate since you've had weird like finger breaking issues. So.
It looks kind of engorged.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, it's bad. So, I'm struggling.
Just the tip is engorged.
I'm struggling.
Oh, well, we're going to start a support group. Well, sorry to hear that. And finally, Jonathan Hederle is here. He's a licensed professional counselor, an expert on substance abuse treatment, a certified Asian. He's written published book chapters on Game of Thrones, Star Wars, and Walking Dead. He's also served as a panelist for HeroesCon and Wizard World Comic-Con. And each week, he rounds up two great stories of psychology in the news that we call Being Human.
So a recent study published in Harm Reduction Journal argues that weed could actually help solve the opioid crisis here in America. So drug overdoses are now the leading cause of death for Americans under 50, killing an estimated 59,000 people last year. And heroin and prescription painkillers are the drugs that account for the vast majority of deaths. So there's also a previous study that found states with medical marijuana had nearly 25% fewer fatal overdoses compared to states where pot remains strictly illegal. So this research shows or claims to show that whether it be legalized marijuana, medical marijuana has a strong correlation with lower rates of overdoses or prescriptions for painkillers in those states. So Emma Kate, do you think marijuana is the answer, part of the solution, or just making a bad situation worse when it comes to the opioid crisis?
I mean, I think it could be part of the solution. I don't think it is the answer to solve this crisis.
I think it's the only answer.
Is it? Yeah, weed's the only way. Okay. But
wait, we're talking weed or wheat?
Weed.
Weed, okay. Great.
Right. Yes. No, but
Frank's smoking wheat.
Yeah.
It's like we're gonna eat a lot of bread.
Yay, bread. No, carbs are good. But weed, basically they're trying to say that if you're not if marijuana is legalized, then you can use that instead of opioids to potentially deal with pain. And that's true. You know, marijuana does affect the central nervous system in certain aspects. But my concern, though, is, I mean, people always say, oh, well, it's not addictive. But the reality is there is an addictive component to weed. And then there's also cons as well. So I don't think this can be the total answer. It's not going to solve it, obviously.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, I've worked with young adults for 20 some years now. And my view of this has really evolved, and I'm definitely not in the camp that weed is all good or the camp that says weed is this horrible thing that leads to all kinds of bad things. I think it's kind of like, I've used this analogy before, it's like saying, is fire good or bad? And for me, the answer is, it depends. It
bad.
Depends on if it's in your fireplace or on your roof.
You're and in so your condo.
Mm-hmm.
Or on my condo.
Patio.
Right, yeah. That's another story. We almost burned our apartment down the second year we were married. So we had fire on the wall, the fire of the bathroom.
And Emma Kate did burn her apartment down too.
Yeah, so. That happened.
Yeah, and Emma Kate's apartment did burn down.
So, bad analogy, all of it. Dave.
So fire bad.
Yeah, so sometimes fire bad. And what I'd say is I think we have to be guided by the data. And if there is data that says weed, if it's legalized, can reduce worse outcomes like, you know, heroin addiction and overdoses and things like that, then I think we need to listen to that. That makes sense to me.
I think,
Frank, do you have any opinion about any of this?
All I know is in states where it's legalized, Medicaid, is it Medicaid or Medicare? Medicaid bills for painkillers dropped 25%.
Well, I mean, the first thing I would remark is that nobody that has an ounce of common sense is going to say marijuana and heroin are equal in terms of their, you know, their risk. But let's not pretend that marijuana advocates don't have an agenda behind them as well. So, I mean, I've definitely, like you, Dave, evolved, but there's also some previous precedent that kind of also makes me pause a little bit, because that was the same argument that they made years ago about Suboxone or methadone, and in and of itself, that became a problem in and of itself as well. So it maybe helped some people get off heroin, but now they were addicted to Suboxone or methadone, and they still really hadn't made strong improvement in their life. And the other is, you know, I'd like to see this play out long term, because a great argument would be, well, you know, people, once you make marijuana more available, would alcohol rates go down? And so we just kind of know the addictive brain and people that really seek out sensation seeking and addictive, like, I mean, they're at a higher risk for demonstrating more problems if they don't develop additional coping skills and strategies for healthy and responsible living. So, I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I think the marijuana advocates are also overselling this simplistic solution as well.
Yeah, so, I would agree with that. I think there's definitely an agenda behind some of it. And for me, that's where I have to say we need to be guided by the data and good research, not someone's agenda.
All right, so moving on. So a neuroimaging study shows that narcissists feel distressed rather than gratified when viewing themselves. So a fixation on one's physical appearance is a hallmark of narcissism, but new research suggests that highly narcissistic people experience emotional distress rather than gratification when they see an image of themselves. So highly narcissistic men displayed brain activity that indicated negative effect and conflicting emotional processing when viewing themselves. So Frank, do you feel distressed rather than gratified when you view yourself in the mirror?
I have told you this a million times. I have an attachment disorder, not narcissism, neither of which are curable. But with that said, I guess I was surprised and sort of not by the study, because there's the whole narcissists love themselves. But really, as I thought about it, it's sort of the human's brain. It's a survival mechanism. And if your internal state is anguish or hate of oneself, then your external defense against that is going to be like, I'm the best. I'm terrific. I'm the greatest there ever was. So that kind of makes narcissism make even more sense to me, I think.
Yeah, like that sort of inner conflict. It's funny how the brain imaging, you can't really hide that, obviously, but you're portraying yourself to be this person when the reality is that's not how you feel on the inside, potentially.
So that, if we take that one step further, I must feel awesome on the inside, right?
I hope so, because you don't look it on the outside.
Yeah, you look
That's
like
what
crap.
I'm saying.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah. So when I look in the mirror and go, I'm hideous, on the inside, my brain is happy.
Right.
Okay, that makes no sense, but okay, yeah. There.
Well, it's like we say, Frank, you've got a face and a body for podcasting.
Yes, I do.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, it'll be our trending topic, which is pop culture and fear in fearful times. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Good psychology can change your life. At PsychBytes, we feature articles and videos with practical psychology that you can use every day. PsychBytes is a new psychology website with free articles and videos from dozens of the best psychology experts. Check it out on psychbytes.com.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville, along with Frank Gaskell, Jonathan Hederle, and Emma Kate Wright in Charlotte. And our trending topic today is pop culture and fear in these fearful times. And let me ask you guys, we've talked before about similar ideas and topics. Do you feel like there's no question that we're in fearful times? Do you feel like that's being reflected in very clear ways in popular culture, movies, TV shows, music, and so on, that's more current and coming out now? Are you seeing more of that now? Jonathan, what do you think?
I think we're starting to see it. I think pop culture tends to play catch-up for the amount of time it takes for film or television to go into production. But recently this year, you know, you had Get Out, which I thought was a very smart horror film that had a lot of social commentary buried beneath it, I think, in the coming years, both as a reaction to Trump, to Brexit, to Russia, but also even the rising racial tension in America. You're going to see more and more art and entertainment reflect that in the content that they deliver.
Frank, what do you think?
Well, it's interesting. When I was preparing for this podcast, I was looking at different decades and different times of fear or stress or war. And in the 50s, everything was just, let's all be happy. Let's all watch, you know, Marilyn Monroe and Frank Sinatra and Elvis do all their little happy stuff. And the argument was it was in response to fear of nuclear war, that we're just going to deny that this existed. The problem with that time frame and maybe why that was is you could only watch two or three stations and there was radio. Now it feels as if there's this just crazy hodgepodge. We have that, what was that musical that won everything? La La Land? I mean, you've got La La Land on one hand, you've got Get Out on the other. It feels like a real hodgepodge that is not as coherent as, say, the Vietnam wars that came, Vietnam movies that came out after the Vietnam and gave popular culture a way to talk about it. I feel like it's noise right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely, we're seeing it. Like after 9/11, there was a lot more terrorism, Middle Eastern things coming up within pop culture. And like Frank was talking about, you know, with the 1950s and the threat of nuclear war, you know, they really were able to escape. But I was thinking about this, and you can't really escape this in this day and age where it's so much harder, because I feel like pop culture is way more political, like even with celebrities, not necessarily with, you know, a TV show per se, but everyone has to be political. And if you don't if you don't make a stand or you don't voice your thought, then, that's saying something right there. So to me, it feels like, it's harder for people to catch a break when maybe... So I guess pop culture, in my opinion, I think it's there. It's not as pervasive as it could be, but the sort of fear kind of, it's present.
So do you guys have examples of the way fear is expressed in pop culture? Jonathan gave a good one with Get Out. Do you have other examples of how fear is being expressed in our culture now through entertainment?
Well, to me, it really is going to be two areas that historically have been great venues for pop culture commentary. It's either horror films or sci-fi. And one of the reasons for that is both of them are able to create a detachment from the real life events so that they can create some type of commentary that doesn't feel didactic or preachy. That is a complaint that a lot of people have, myself included, that oftentimes liberal Hollywood takes themselves too seriously and they believe in their own Kool-Aid that they're drinking themselves. So when you think about Night of the Living Dead, that movie is not about zombies. Mm-mm. It's about the racial conflict and the divisive nature of the draft for the Vietnam War and how the class system and the race system was really exploiting the poor and the black community to go fight a war that was not popular or supported here in America. So, and then George Romero did all types of horror films that was commentary on capitalism and consumerism, things along those lines. When you think about science fiction, The Day the Earth Stood Still, it's really about McCarthyism. It's about the fear of nuclear war. And so I'm excited that you have a lot of these new films like Blade Runner 2049. You have even It coming out, which, maybe was in development long before a lot of these things happened and was written long ago, but it's all about tapping into those childhood fears, those universal fears that I don't think you really have to communicate to people that we live in scary times. They're feeling it. They're being bombarded with social media and all the headlines around them.
Yeah, I think potentially we're seeing it in the next Netflix shows with... I don't know if this is a real increase in gratuitous violence, which I'm not opposed to. Let me just be clear.
But not with the YouTube channels you follow.
It's. I feel like we're seeing a reflection of some of that of our fear and war and everything that's happening in pop culture. But I also think, given our demographic, we're getting an echo from the 80s movies, where we're getting some horror movies that are coming back. We're getting the sci-fi films that we're wanting to see, maybe just nostalgia reasons. They're trying to catch our demographic to go see it. I don't know which is which. I don't know if it's even knowable.
Well, I think one other thing that's happening is fear is also turning into anger. Very Star Wars sort of statement right there. But you even see this with the Democratic Party is starting to become fractured, to where you have kind of artists of color that are challenging white perspectives, or female artists challenging a male perspective on their plight and their struggles, to where they don't want them to be the spokesperson for their struggle. They want them to actually listen. They want them to be educated. And, I have some mixed feelings about that. I feel like everybody, Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, liberals, can always be educated and learn a little bit more. But I'm excited that the anger might turn into more opportunities for women and people of different racial backgrounds and ethnicities having a platform to create some art and entertainment.
Yeah, and I feel like, opening up, like even recently, who was it? There was somebody that was cast for Aladdin for a role, the live action Aladdin, and he's not of Middle Eastern descent when that character is originally of Middle Eastern descent. And so, there's pushback from that when it's like apparently the the screenplay was rewritten so that it could be quote unquote a white person cast there. And but so, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation if there wasn't all of this social conflict right now. And I think it's good that, you know, we are starting to see some of this where, okay, yeah, we should be pursuing more Asian actors and Asian roles and vice versa, you know, for Middle Eastern. It doesn't matter. I just think it's good that we're starting the conversation. We're going to see it more, even if it is tough.
Let's go back to something that Frank said earlier, which I think I want to explore a little more. And he said back in the 50s, there was a clear through line in the tone of entertainment. It was all, you know, diversion. It was all distraction and light. And then you hit the 70s and there was a clear theme, even though there were comedies and there were other things, but there was a heaviness to it. Like,
well,
a lot
even
of the...
Even in the 60s, you started to see Rebel Without a Cause, you started to see more rebellious attitudes starting to come out.
Well, you did, and what's interesting about the 60s and comparing it to now is the 60s is where you started to see those two things kind of converge, and mm-hmm. you had musicals that were very light and, you know, kind of Mary Poppins stuff, and then you also had these heavier themed films, and so you had this kind of swamp of stuff that started in the 60s, and then you kind of saw this heaviness in the 70s. I wonder if we're in a time, like you said, where there's not a clear through line in entertainment right now, because not only is there so much stuff out there, but it's thematically, it's like Emma Kate was just talking about the whole like whitewashing in cinema and coming out of a sense of justice. Those themes are out there that have to do with social justice. There are things that have to do with fear. There are things that are more light. It's just, it's a soup. Almost feels, right, it feels like it's a soup that reflects where we are culturally, which is hardly at all integrated. It's
right.
It's a very disintegrated culture. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think we're fractured culturally, and I think that can be linked to social media and the silos that we've all built around ourselves. But it's also the number of outlets. You know, you can get information anywhere, and if you're interested in it, you can find it, and there's where you plant yourself.
Yeah, and I think that from an entertainment standpoint, we were already going through a sea change with television becoming more prominent, film, at least cinemas, sort of being downgraded with the advent of streaming services and Netflix. But I think all of them are hitting also a tipping point as well. So I've been reading in the last several days about how the cinematic universe is a cinema. It's going downhill. They're abandoning it because they are not seeing quality returns outside of Marvel. I mean, you see all of the uproar with Star Wars. It's in flux. You see the DC universe. It's in flux. You see the King Kong, Godzilla. You see the Mummy or the old Universal. So all of that is now, there's this tipping point in cinema that I think you're going to start to see more films like Get Out or The Big Sick, where they go back to original, hopefully mid-budget, to where it gives a platform for people to tell a story that has some significance and relevance. And I think the other tipping point, which I'm hoping, is we're coming out of this period of 5 to 10 years of just bubblegum fluff music. And I'm ready for the music of the 60s and 70s, where these artists, like even if you think about the Beatles, they took it to this another level where they started to have some real relevant social commentary embedded in their music. And I would love to see some of the popular artists of today take that challenge on versus continue to make some of the same sort of poppy kind of America's Got Talent sound of music.
Yeah, I think it would be nice to see that. I know recently Logic performed at the VMAs about the suicide hotline phone number. I can't remember it off the top of my head. It's 1-800-something, obviously. And that after that night, I think they had like a 50% surge in calls. And so it's like they have so much power. And we do need to do this. We do need to have people really promoting and pushing for change, because the reality is, like, it's not going to come from government at this point. Like, we're going to have to really incite, you know, to get people to want to do things. And we got to look towards people that have the bigger platform for that.
I don't know if some of these artists are capable of it. I think the people who grew up in the 50s and 60s, I just, if you look at Bob Dylan and the Beatles and Eric Clapton, that's a whole different kind of human being that was built just of different stuff. And I don't know that there's too many people out there that, as there were, that really are that concerned. I think they're very protected from the real world.
I don't know. I mean, I think you've got artists that are emerging, anyone from Kendrick Lamar to some of the folk artists, Father John Misty and others that are really, I think, have the potential. I don't think ever that the lightweight artists in any era have been the people that speak in this way. I think it's really been the people that come from the sides and do it. So we'll see. I think time will tell. All right, we're going to take our last break, and when we come back, it will be our fall TV preview. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Hero House Publishing is pleased to announce Heroic Inspirations by Michael Kreitzer. Over the ages, superheroes in various forms have been speaking to humanity in togas, robes, and now tights and capes. They speak to us about the human condition. They help us work through our fears and failures. Heroic Inspirations draws out rich lessons superheroes provide for our daily lives. How does Superman teach us to deal with difficult people? What do the X-Men tell us about balancing individual and communal identities? Superheroes speak to these and many other life questions. Michael Kreitzer has been researching and teaching on superheroes for over 10 years, and now his book, Heroic Inspirations, is available to you at herohousepublishing.com or amazon.com. Order your copy today.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. I'm Dave Verhagen, along with Frank Gaskell, Jonathan Hederle, and Emma Kate Wright. And we wrap this all up with our fall TV preview. And I'm going to give you guys a couple of TV shows that are coming up in the fall. And then you're going to tell me if you're interested in it or not. Okay? How's that sound?
Let's go.
Good.
All right. So the first one is a HBO series that just started this weekend. It's called The Deuce. And the significance of The Deuce is that it is a TV show about the, I guess it's the 70s. It is set in grimy New York City, and it's about the beginning or the rise of the porn industry. But the significance of it is that it's by David Simon, and those who know David Simon's work, he was the guy who was behind The Wire, which some people say is the best television show of all time. It stars James Franco in a dual role. It has Maggie Gyllenhaal, and so on. So that's the setup for this. Any interest in that movie?
Or TV show, right?
Oh, I'm sorry, TV show, right, that series.
Yes, I would like to see it. It looks, it sounds creepy. But I love those 70s grimy, gritty little things because it's just nostalgic. I remember that.
I am not particularly enthralled by the way it sounds, but I always give HBO a go just because they produce such quality work. So I would check out the pilot for sure.
Yeah, I'll check it out, but it's not high on my must-see list.
Okay, and why is that?
Well, I have this weird love-hate relationship with James Franco, and sometimes he is somebody that I can really get behind, and other times his choices in acting and method I find very off-putting. The subject matter I'm not particularly interested in. I don't have, like Frank, I don't have nostalgia for 70s porn, so I mean, so for me, I mean, the biggest selling point is David Simon. But even like The Wire was a show that I admired, I never have to watch it again. So, you know, that's something to where I've never found him to be immensely watchable in a lot of ways.
Okay. Yeah, I'm the same way. The content seems a little weird and off-putting, but I'm wondering about if it'll be, you know, as good a show as we know David Simon can make. All right. Here's another show. This is The Vietnam War. Ugh. It is a PBS documentary series, and it's by Ken Burns.
I'm going to black out. I saw Ken Burns' The Civil War, I own it. I have watched that entire documentary at least 6 or 7 times. I'm going to lose my mind over this documentary.
All right. How about you, Jonathan?
As soon as I heard Ken Burns was doing this, the last month I've rewatched Platoon, Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket, We Were Soldiers. I even found some streaming services where I watched this old 80s TV show called Tour of Duty, which was not very good. I've been looking forward to this. I've been waiting for Ken Burns to tackle the Vietnam War. I feel like there are a lot of lessons that we are repeating as a culture that we need to be reminded of that took place in the Vietnam era upheaval.
Truthfully, only because you guys sounded excited about it would I watch it, because I really don't like war stuff. It's just not my cup of tea.
Well, and the great thing about Ken Burns is this is going to cover race relations at home. It's going to cover the music and the pop culture. It's going to be the Vietnam War is going to be sort of the hub to explore all of American and world culture and how it changed and was influenced by the Vietnam conflict. I am so excited for this.
Yeah, I can't wait.
All right, here's another one. Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah. Here's the problem with that.
It's Star Trek.
Did I say Star Wars? I'm sorry, Star Trek.
No, you said Star Trek.
That's the problem.
Here's the problem. I think it's going to be good. I haven't seen the first episode. I think the first one or two episodes is going to be on CBS. But then you have to pay for the CBS app to watch the rest. And I'm done buying more apps to watch TV, so I'm not going to bother.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch that.
Dave, did you say Star Trek?
I did.
Well, then that's my answer of how excited I am about.
Shut up, Heatherly.
All right,
hope
a couple
you
more.
Die soon and not prosper.
There is a show called Mindhunter. It'll be on Netflix starting in October. And it is a story about FBI agents who are trying to kind of hunt down serial killers. And it is fictionalized, but it's a Netflix show, and it's got all the, David Fincher is one of the executive producers. It's got an amazing pedigree. Does that sound like a show you would be interested in?
Absolutely. I would love to watch that. I'm all about a good thriller and a hunt.
Probably. It sounds like Manhunter, the Hannibal Lecter story.
Yeah, that was the David Fincher to me is the selling point, but it sounds an awful lot like Manhunter or just even the recent Hannibal TV show. If it has sort of the feel of Zodiac, the David Fincher movie from about 10 or so years ago, that, I think, is a very underappreciated film. But if, I'll check it out. I'm more interested in that than the 70s porn show, but it's still not super high on my list.
Dave, will you be watching CBS's The Young Sheldon?
No, I will not.
I will not either, no. I've had enough of Big Bang Theory. I don't need him when he's 8.
Right, and I think the early word on that is that it's a really bad show.
No doubt.
I have no idea. Okay, last one. There's a show coming out called The Good Doctor, and it is about a doctor with Asperger's, and it is a guy on the autism spectrum, and it's kind of like a not quite House, because I don't think he's a jerk. I think he's this sort of savant, genius-y kind of Asperger-y guy. Freddie Highmore is the good doctor. He's the guy that played Norman Bates in the Bates Motel, and he's been in tons of other movies. Really great actor. Any interest in that one?
I'll tell you, I'm getting really over all these shows where somebody says, oh, I'm Aspie, I'm autistic or whatever, because I still really have not seen it portrayed very well. In a typical, it's either too much or it's too little or it's a stereotype, it doesn't fit. So I'm just always skeptical. I'll watch a little bit of it, but I'm always skeptical of those shows.
Yeah, no, I would definitely check it out just to agree with Frank. How accurate do they portray it? And then just, is it entertaining?
Nah, I won't. I don't. Even if it's good, it doesn't interest me. Mm-hmm. I burned out on House very, very quick, so those types of shows that just seem to retread the same storyline and beats get really old to me.
I'm just worried we're going to be seeing Doogie Howser all over again.
Doogie Howser, Aspie.
It might be. All right, we're going to wrap it up. That's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. We hope you'll check out shrinktank.com for articles, videos, and polls about all kinds of things in popular culture. And we hope you'll check out shrinktank.com. Also, follow us on Twitter @shrink_tank and like us on Facebook by searching for the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our producer and theme music composer is Sean Beck. In the Queen City, it's Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell. And from Music City, I'm Dave Verhagen. Thanks for listening. Please tell all your friends about us and make it a good week. Shrink Tank.